We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
To train yourself not to overreact to anything good or bad with Weissman for at least the half of this season, I would say. Like, you're going to see the athleticism flash, but you're also going to see mistakes. There's no way around it. Don't get too overexcited about the athleticism or too down about the mistakes. And, 35 games in, let's see where he's at.
The one thing that, as we're looking for the steps to take to improve, the one thing that I'd like to see James Weissman do right now, next time they play, just be more conscientious of rebounds. The Golden State Warriors need somebody to rebound for them, and I'm looking at the tall kid in the middle as probably my best chance to start correcting this market inefficiency. Right now, the Warriors have been rebounded in 9 of their 12 games. They've grabbed only 47% of available rebounds. And, all the good defense that we talk about being paramount for them to play, if you don't then get the rebound after your good defense, that's where your good defense just died in vain. That's where your transition bucket didn't get its start from. It's where the break never happened. They got to start rebounding the basketball, come hell or high water, by hook or crook. It doesn't really matter. Start punching dudes in the nuts if you have to, Draymond, to get rebounds. Get rebounds. No apologies how you go about getting those rebounds. They need them badly. Another thing that they need badly is for Draymond Green to make an effort to score. It's not going to be the difference between the playoffs or not the playoffs, but it's the difference in, does everybody have to play with their hair on fire to win tonight, or can we maybe take a foot off the brake or the gas just a little from someone other than Steph Curry? Like, Draymond Green just recently bragged about his gigantic basketball IQ. He needs to start applying that basketball intelligence quotient to a little offensive concern. Not much. He doesn't need to be a 20-point-a-game guy. He doesn't even need to be a 15-point-a-game guy. He doesn't even need to be a 10-point-a-game guy. You can't be the I-scored-one-point-tonight guy. And he seems so comfortable in that box score where he goes 0-for-2 and then maybe hits a free throw at some point in the game, and there you go, he scored. That it's like, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. And I'm not saying that he needs to develop an offensive game to get Twitter off of his back or critics off of his back. He needs to develop a little bit of an offensive game to balance out the other team's defense. Right now, there are two guys that you do not need to guard on the Golden State Warriors starting five. You don't need to guard Oubre if he's standing at the three-point line. Please let him shoot. And you don't need to guard Draymond Green anywhere on the court. Anywhere. I mean, he might make the right pass, but he ain't going to take the shot. So why guard him? It's not the end-all be-all. But it's something that Steve Kerr needs to walk over to Draymond Green and say, dude, we need something from you over here. You are a nothing offensively. And as good as you are defensively, you cannot be a nothing offensive player. He scored 35 points this year across all games. We played 12 games. He's got 35 points. 32 points.
Well, in fairness, he missed the first few.
Right. In eight, so 32 points in eight games. Either way, that sucks too.
Yeah, well, he's not. It's not enough. That and here's the thing, Draymond knows that. Draymond knows he's going to have to be better than 4 points a game. You know, so I don't know why he has looked for the hoop even less than in the past, but he's looking less. I mean, that's very clear. This is not just, oh man, his shooting percentages have gotten even worse. Like, he is less interested, and he's going to have to figure that out.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm not trying to argue with anybody because, yeah, a scoring average of 4.0 is poor. But I wonder if he's being too deferential to Oubre and Wiggins to get them involved in the offense. Because I don't understand any other way that Green's box score lines make the sense they do. Because he rebounds. He's had games where he's, you know, had a ton of assists. He's not been a net minus. But the fact that he doesn't look to score suggests to me that he's trying to defer to the new guys. I mean, Curry's going to get his. He's not even an issue here. You know, maybe he's trying to find ways to make Wiseman more of a dynamic scorer. But the point of the Warrior offense has been, for 6 years now, distribution. Move the ball around. Get it to the guy who has the best shot. And Draymond Green has been active enough to be the guy with the best shot more than two possessions a game. That's what I see.
Yeah, I mean that's as simply as you can put it. Like frankly, none of the other guys in that starting lineup are shy about putting up a shot, whether they're shooting it well or not. And maybe that's part of the issue, but he needs to be more assertive scoring, and really he needs to do that around the hoop. And that's not something he's unable to do, or something he hasn't done previously. I mean, he's shooting it less times a game than he has since his rookie year.
You cannot be the second worst scorer in the NBA and get minutes for the Golden State Warriors. You just can't. I mean, like, I understand his defense is so important, but you can't be the best defensive player in the world and the worst offensive player in the world at the same time and tell me that you're a great basketball player. You're at best half an answer to our problems. And
well, I still think he brings more to your offense than that.
Sure. But here's the deal, man. Like, I got it from Slater right here. He is only 32 total points in 8 games. Of all the NBA players who have logged at least 150 minutes, that's the second fewest. Like, he's not scoring. He's not even looking to score. He's not threatening to score. He is someone that you do not have to guard. Like, Draymond Green with the ball means 5 guys should be running at 4 other Warriors to guard. That is how little he is involved. You know, oh, he's going to make the right pass. Well, that's great. Guys are jumping in passing lanes because they know this guy ain't going to shoot it. And that's how you get turnovers. I mean, it's so, look, we got an awful lot of respect for who Draymond is as a player. This is a clear, you got to figure it out. You're a veteran on the team. You're a leader on the team. You can't be passing bucks of responsibility to nobody else. Like, the guy right now isn't even covering up half his career scoring average. If you're telling me Draymond Green's strategy was to score the least amount of points possible in the year that Klay Thompson nor Kevin Durant are here anymore, I'm going to tell you he's got a funny way of going about walking into an NBA season. So he better get on it. It would make life easier for Steve Kerr. Someone on the text line say he's turning into Ben Wallace. Here's the deal, though. Ben Wallace was winning Defensive Player of the Years on championship teams when he wasn't scoring. Draymond is not winning Defensive Player of the Year this year if that's his scoring average. They're going to give it to a more well-rounded player, period, end of story. And by the way, Miles Turner, right now, by himself, has like more blocks than 6 other NBA teams. So it's his award until somebody takes it from him.
It's just a terrible comparison anyway. Even if he scored 4 points all year, he's doing more for an offense than Ben Wallace ever did. So it's just not the right comparison. The problem is it's the second part of what Anthony Slater said, right? It's not so much that, you know, among however many players he has the second fewest points, whatever. It's that he is not a threat to score. He's not looking to score. And sometimes he would be the best option to score, and he's passing up on that option. And that's where it starts to make your offense not function as well. Draymond Green doesn't have to be a high scorer as long as Draymond Green's participation makes your offense function at a high level. And he does so many other things that he doesn't have to be the best shooter or the biggest scorer to make your offense really good. He does have to shoot it more than four times a game and score more than 4 points a game. That's not going to work.
And it seemed like he was getting that in the Toronto and Indiana games, because he shot 8 times against Toronto and he shot 7 times against Indiana. And I don't think anybody would complain about that. I mean, it shows an activity, but it was the games before then when it was 3 shots, 2 shots, 3 shots, 3 shots. And then this last game where there was just 2. I mean, he's shooting 28% overall. So that's not a good sign. He's shooting 20% from 3. It seems.
Yeah, but if you're shooting once and twice a game, you never even give yourself the opportunity
to
get any feel at all.
Oh no, I believe I'm not arguing that point at all. What I suggest is either he's packed it in, which I don't believe is true, or he's spent an inordinate amount of time trying to get other people the ball. And again, the offense works when it's more organic, when you take the shots that come to you. And there doesn't have to be a minimum number of shots for him to get, but it has to be more than 2 in a game.
And I think
that's not workable.
I think you're right that he has focused on facilitation to try to make the new guys feel comfortable, and there's some wisdom to that. It's just gone a little too far. I also think maybe we need to think about, you know, as much as he's lost weight and he looks to be in great shape, he did get sick with COVID right before the season started, and maybe to a certain extent he's playing himself into game shape.
Maybe. How about this? The guy has an awful lot of benefit of the doubt. Draymond Green's got house credit. So we're just talking about what needs to happen, what we hope would happen, what we think would make it easier for those around him to be successful if, you know, and we're not saying Draymond go get 15 a night. We're saying get 9. Asking a starting NBA player to average 9 points per game is a very small ask. It's not a big deal.
Be a viable option.
Yeah. Yeah. Or how about this? Don't be someone who's totally worth ignoring. You got to at least keep the other team honest defensively, which is something that his great genius basketball IQ should easily wrap its own mind around. So
it still does to an extent, right? Like he's still, how many times even this season, not playing great, have we seen him have an open look at 3, pass it up, drive the lane, still draw defense and give somebody a lob as a result? Like, he can do all that, but if you're getting at least a little bit of attention, that's because you, in the past, have finished around the rim as well. So let's just see a little more of that.
No doubt. Now, the only other theory, the only other, like, what is happening out there would be to pivot to, well, Steve Kerr has sat Draymond Green down and said, well, I don't want you shooting anymore. It sounds a little nuts. Doesn't sound like the way Steve Kerr would go about operating. However, how Steve Kerr goes about operating apparently has rubbed NBA players the wrong way, or one in particular named Kevin Durant, who is being discussed on the Ryan Russillo podcast with Bill Simmons and Jackie McMullen. And this was an interesting, who knows what went wrong with KD in Golden State, but apparently at the end there was a little bit more friction between Durant and Kerr than we really knew about. And here is Ryan Russillo's podcast again with Bill Simmons and Jackie McMullen talking about just that.
That was the sleeping giant of this whole Harden sweepstakes, was Golden State. And I don't think they were in it, but if they had decided to get into it,
I heard he was not, he and Durant are close and Durant wanted to leave there. So I think there was some communication about
Steve Kerr stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Kerr was like, yeah, you might not want to play for him, which again, it sounds insane that Durant could complain about anything with Golden State, but it sounds like he did.
But the only complaint that Kevin Durant had about Golden State was he wasn't Steph Curry, and he was never going to be Steph Curry in that market. And no matter what he did and how many championships they won, Steph Curry was still the guy. And that was never going to change.
And beyond that, Curry was Kerr's guy, and KD knew that. And it's like,
but there was a reason Curry was Kerr's guy, because
he was his team.
Well, not only that, he's one of the most accommodating superstars I've ever seen. I've ever been around. So,
and I think that's the KD Kerr thing definitely fell apart the last year. I think that was a piece of it.
So, KD Kerr disintegrating at the very end, to the point where if the Warriors really were thinking about approaching James Harden in terms of a trade, Harden called Kevin Durant and said, tell me about the Warriors. And he's like, man, you don't want to go play for Steve Kerr. So if that indeed happened, why would he say that? And the very first thing I think of, well, what's Steve going to ask of you, brand new player? He's going to ask you to acknowledge your other teammates exist by passing them the ball. And he's going to demand that you play defense. Yeah. I could see exactly why a coach like Steve Kerr wouldn't be the message that James Harden wanted to receive all afternoon long. But to think that Kevin Durant would ever use that as a demerit, though, like, slaps what Kevin Durant supposedly believes right in the face. So I don't know what to make of that.
Okay, I have a pinheaded theory that Durant, if he thought that Harden was serious about Golden State, and Durant wanted him to come to Brooklyn, he'd have to come up with something. For some reason why Golden State would not be a good place for Harden to go. And Kerr's as good a name as any if you're looking for something to dissuade somebody from going somewhere. I think there's a possibility, while I have no knowledge, that might just have been tactical. You don't want to go there. You want to come here. Because the weird thing about, you know, pinning it on Kerr is that Steve Nash is in many ways the same kind of coach, only without the resume. So it's a little hard to make those ends meet unless you just say, well, Durant was just selling Harden on not going to Golden State because it means if he goes to Golden State, he doesn't go to Brooklyn. And I have a feeling that Durant wanted Harden to go to Brooklyn enough that he would tell a tale to make that happen.
But I also think that Kevin Durant would be like, here's why you shouldn't go there, because I'm in Brooklyn and you want to come play with me, not them. Like, I don't know if he'd have to cut the legs out of the Warriors to make himself appear any taller.
That might have been part of the sale, too. But, I mean, if we are to believe the narrative that they put forward, Harden asked specifically about Golden State. And that's when Durant said, you don't want to play for Kerr. And what it sounds like to me, and again, I'm basing this on nothing whatsoever, is that Durant was going to say anything just to dissuade Harden from going there, even if that was an option. And I also don't know if that was in play, that he would just, you know, come up with a reason why he shouldn't go to Golden State. Well, I don't know. I got to come up with something fast. I'll just come up with Kerr.
I just try to figure out why. Like, I don't – the whole thing is curious and a little suspicious to me. And I wish they could or had said more about what exactly they were saying they had been told. Because, like, clearly if Kevin Durant calls James Harden and is like, man, just so you know, as you're looking at places you might want to play, Steve Kerr sucks, dog. Like, that's messed up. And it doesn't seem to coincide with anything that I know about Kevin Durant or Steve Kerr. If Kevin Durant, when asked by James Harden, said, you know, like, his biggest focus is defense and he's not going to change the offense for you, so I don't know how much you're going to like that. That sounds very believable.
Right. That's talking, you know, basketball.
Right. So it's just hard for, like, with that little information about exactly what they're saying happened, it's hard for me to say sort of who's being the dirtbag here, but my guess is that it's all being dramatized to a much bigger thing than it actually was, especially since I don't think the Warriors were ever anywhere near close enough for it to be a real issue.
apparently there was something in Ethan Sherwood Strauss's book, The Victory Machine, about how at the end when it was getting bad, Kerr was telling Durant to be a little bit more aggressive, and Durant shouted back to him from the court, "Don't tell me how to play basketball," that sort of thing.
Yeah, and look, that's nothing to me.
Right, that's a nothing burger to me too, and I am not surprised when an MVP, a multiple time scoring champ, gets into the "I don't really need a head coach" mode. Like, you are nothing more than a guy who checks me in and out of games. There's not a lot you can teach me. You're just a coordinator here. I get that, but it's still the wrong way to treat a coach or get out of bed, and it just speaks to the weird kind of situation that they have set up for themselves in Brooklyn, where it's a coach by committee, or at least that's what Kyrie was talking about. And all I'm just telling you is that's a team full of special cases who want special treatment, but wants to also be regarded as a basketball lifer who doesn't need the special treatment. So I am hard to manage. I'm easy to manage. You got to micromanage me. It's total hands-off approach, laissez-faire at all times. Like, these guys, whatever they're getting, they're going to want the other thing. Like, that's how it really feels. Between Kyrie, Harden, and Kevin Durant, more than anything else, the grass will always be greener in the neighbor's yard, and they're constantly peeking over the fence to see what it looks like. It just feels like that's kind of who they are. And they are now all on career trajectories to suggest there might be something to that. I mean, how many different uniforms do you want to wear? For these guys, they're all on their third uniform.
That, which is probably league average for a guy who plays more than 5 years. So I don't know that is necessarily unusual. Well, I don't know how many guys get a crack at four teams. I don't have the will to look at Basketball Reference to look that up. But the idea that, you know, that Durant had it bad in Oakland seems far fetched. He wasn't fully satisfied at the end. And I think part of that was he wanted to see if he could be the center of a team, which he never was in Oklahoma City, and he never was in Golden State. So he wanted to see if he could be the LeBron figure on a team. So he went to Brooklyn. His choice of Kyrie Irving seems a bit benighted, but, you know, everybody gets to pick their super friends.
Yeah, what does benighted mean?
A little bit loopy.
Okay.
Huh. Interesting.
It's a word. I wouldn't make it up.
I would never doubt your verbal acumen, Ray.
Okay. And, you know, now that they went out and got Harden, they've sort of doubled down on this. This is going to be, if they win it, it's going to be one of the weirdest championship teams ever.
For sure.
And I don't know what the parallel is with the possible exception of the 75 Warrior team that did it with one guy. I mean, this is a team that's going to be doing it with three guys, plus Joe Harris, you know, people in accounting.
Why is the 75 Warriors a parallel?
It's not a parallel. I'm just saying it's weird, because that's a team that on its face should never have won a title. But they rode Rick Barry, and Rick Barry drove them, and it somehow worked. And in part, maybe because the league was kind of at a low ebb, it was pre-Bird. It was, you know, Kareem was still playing in Milwaukee at that point.
Half the league was on cocaine.
It might have just been a dead spot year.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like that's early for cocaine.
But just in a weird, as a weird team, that Golden State team in '75 was plenty weird.
Remember, Matt.
If you just look at their lineup. And then try to watch one of the games against Washington in the championship, because I think that's the only game that exists. You don't know how they're doing this. I mean, you expect at any point for anybody they play to run off 17 in a row, and it never happened. And to this day, I think there are a lot of people who saw that team and can't figure out how they won. I mean, the only other team that I can even think of that won sort of outside of the norms of basketball was probably that Detroit team, you know, in the early part of this century.
The Chauncey
team.
That's another team that didn't make sense.
The Mavericks.
Mavericks had a Hall of Famer, though. Dirk was ready.
Just one.
Well, the Pistons team had basically none.
contrary to the Nick Wright statement that you need three Hall of Famers to beat LeBron, just one there. And as much as the Spurs may have had three Hall of Famers, may have even had four Hall of Famers, that team wasn't very traditional in terms of like a big three or even a big two either.
Right.
No, but it had a lot of useful, after the fact. Yeah, it had a lot of other useful components that
right.
you could you know pick and play in different situations, and you had a great coach who knew how to do that.
Yeah,
but
totally.
But this
and
is
I think
a team.
What's interesting.
This is a team. I'm sorry, I'm going on, but I just want to make one last point. This would be a team that, if it won, would be winning with three superstars, kind of a guy in Joe Harris, not much else, and a coach who's never done it before on any level. Even the Warriors had more pieces in 2015.
With assistant coaches who haven't won on any level.
Yeah.
Think about it. There's not anyone on that coaching staff with, I think, an NBA title.
Allow me to apologize to Jason Kidd, who's clearly a Hall of Famer, but at that point in his career was, you know, just a normal NBA starter. So I wasn't thinking of him on that Mavericks team.
That's right. Who was their two guard?
Terry.
That's right. Jason Terry.
Sean Marion was on that team, but I don't think he's probably quite a Hall of Famer. I mean, Dirk was really the only star they had at that point.
And he hit every free throw in the postseason that year. God, he was good. Okay, so we're about to get to a little Kolsky's Corner here. We've got Nick Wright joining us for our final segment today. What we've got right now, gentlemen, a little something old, a little something new, a little something borrowed, and there's blue in the Buffalo Bills uniform. So that's all, as far as I can take that.
Oh,
no,
sorry.
I'm not. But what we got is a divisional round. Show me your upset. Where's it going to come from? Gentlemen, on Saturday, we got Rams and Packers, Ravens at Bills. I think the Rams are in position to possibly upset. Whenever you got the best defense in the NFL's postseason, I will never dismiss you. I think Jared Goff earned a little bit of more credit for being a tough guy through that thumb injury than people want to give him credit for. There is no doubt about it. The Packers are well-built offensively. Defensively, though, a little bit of a question mark. So Sean McVay goes into Green Bay and wins. That's going to be a serious upset, and I think that it could happen. I do like the Bills to beat the Ravens. I know earlier you picked the Ravens, Matt. I'm just going to go with
this. No, I did not. I certainly did not.
You didn't pick the Ravens?
No, that was right.
Oh, okay. That was Nick. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put any of his thoughts in your mouth, Matt. Forgive me, please. I think the Ravens are in trouble.
Agreed.
The Ravens have never scored more than 20 points in a playoff game with Lamar Jackson as their quarterback, and I don't think Buffalo's defense is going to invite them to do it. And I just think that right now, with all due respect to Patrick Mahomes, there is no better quarterback in football than Allen. Josh Allen right now, I'm not saying he's better than Patrick Mahomes, but he's been playing better football than Patrick Mahomes over the last 2 months. The Bills are 7-0 since week 12, and he leads the AFC with 20 total touchdowns scored by him alone. So I'm taking the Bills, and I even think I'm going to ride him to the Super Bowl. But that's as far as I'm going with my predictions right here. What do you guys think of the Saturday slate?
I think you took it too far with the Bills, but I do think they're going to beat the Ravens. I'm with you that the Rams have some tools that they could upset the Packers, but I don't think they will because the football gods like me to be miserable. And I'm not going to bet against Tom Brady anymore. I'm going to let him retire. He's going to eventually retire, but until then, I don't expect to bet against him very often.
No more fading Brady.
No, not in a game where the other guy's old, too, and boy, this is exactly the sort of thing where he just does something you're not expecting to get a win.
Yeah, your capitulation on Brady is fascinating to me, because you swore last year that nobody should sign this guy. He was literally teetering on the edge.
No, that was Philip Rivers.
Well, it was a number of people, but no, you were down on Brady last year.
And I'm still relatively down on him as a 16-game quarterback, but staring at a playoff scenario in the face where they played great last week on offense, I'm not going to doubt him.
Yeah, again. You know what's also down on Brady? My bank account betting against him. So there you go. I think that's the logic that we're getting on display. And speaking of on display, I heard we got 7 minutes for today's Kolsky's Corner. Let's hit it.
Matt Kolsky takes us back to a simpler time.
Hey, Stella!
To appreciate the pop culture that's aged like a fine wine.
Well, isn't this a fine song and dance?
What are you getting so hot about?
Keep your shirt on.
Where do you get off making remarks like that?
Supposing I say you're a lunkhead.
Well, I ain't much for supposing.
It's time for Kolsky's Corner on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, we really are going in the Wayback Machine today. I believe both of our entrants are in the 30 to 35-year-old range, so here we go. Nearly as old as me, these pieces of pop culture. Let's
whippersnapper.
Begin. Yeah, and rather than tell you the theme, I'm just going to say I have a feeling you'll pick up what I'm putting down, thematically speaking. I also am fairly certain you guys are both familiar with this film, but will you recognize it from this soundbite?
Who's that? What you want?
Police. We've had some complaints about con men pretending to be blind and...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.